The reverse bean, man. You can't sit on the reverse bean. Welcome to Brackets, the tournament style podcast where we determine the best of the best for anything, everything, and absolutely nothing through one-on-one deliberations until a winner is declared. Today's topic, Sean Bean. I'm Austin.
I'm Mike.
Sean Bean is a British actor known for his versatile performances in film, television, and theater. Bean has gained recognition for his ability to portray complex and often morally ambiguous characters, as well as for his distinctive rugged good looks and deep voice.
Austin and I have already gone through and we've completed tournament pre-seeding. Here's your top eight Sean Bean characters. Number one, Boromir. Number two, Eddard Stark. Number three, Richard Sharp from the TV series Sharp. Number four, Alec from GoldenEye. I'm not even going to bother with that Russian last name. Number five, Wilford from Snowpiercer. Six, Ian Howe. Seven, John Marlett, Frankenstein Chronicles. And at number eight, bringing in the rear, Spence from Ronin.
Nothing wrong with a little bit of pre-competition seeding. So our first matchup then is 1v8, yeah? Boromir versus Spence. So, I mean, if anybody isn't aware, we'll just do a quick intro on some of these characters. Some of these intros may be a little more redundant than some of the others. Boromir from Lord of the Rings. Boromir is son and heir of Denethor, steward of Gondor, captain of the White Tower, and one of the nine companions in the quest to destroy the ring. He's filled with good intentions as he sets out to find support for his failing home nation, but is inevitably corrupted by the power of the One Ring along the way.
Spence from Ronin, being portrayed a weak-stomached weapons expert whose place in a four-higher-ops mission is called into question by none other than Robert De Niro.
You know what? I can't say that I actually saw Ronin, but since we set out to do this, I have watched every clip that exists of it on YouTube, and it feels like I have watched it.
I think they have all the clips on YouTube. You can watch the whole movie.
Pretty much, as long as you're okay watching it in like 2 minute and 30 second clips. And you know what? Yeah. Robert De Niro is not the only name in that movie. There's several of them. It's quite studded.
There is. That's that French guy from...
Leon the Professional.
I was going to say Pink Panther, but yeah, him too. And not even the good Pink Panther.
So
I think we should clarify. This is totally subjective on our end, but we're ranking this on. I think it was badassery of the character.
Yep, that's the scientific term.
Yep, yeah, and badassery of Sean's portrayal, and then a tiny hint of good writing, character development, storyline.
It's a combination of the character itself and how the character was portrayed. I mean, in a lot of cases here, Boromir is a good example. There is a little bit of good and a little bit of bad in each of these. And we're just trying to figure out which one is better.
But mostly good. He wanted the ring to save people.
I only want the power to protect my people. Well, yes. It was kind of Braveheart.
And he's from, I was going to say, Mel Gibson as Boromir. all right. I think it's pretty straightforward, but hear me out.
Yeah, yeah.
Spence, SAS, was he though? Might not have been. Could have just been a faker. Could have been badass. He threw up in the car.
So we should have said this at the beginning. There are clearly spoiler alerts ahead. If you have not watched any of these movies and would like to watch them for the first time, you'd probably want to stop listening.
This movie came out in 1998. If you haven't watched it by now, you're never getting around to it.
There's two approaches to how we want people to listen to this.
And also, if you're still waiting to get around to Spence, fold and put away your laundry. You need to hear this.
But to your point, yes, Spence is, I believe in the synopsis of the show, it said that Spence is actually not a weapons expert. He is pretending to be and trying to get away with it as they do this operation. So
definitely a faker.
Weak stomached, faking it, but he's got a fiery temper, spurred up. I mean, he has the advantage of technology between these two if it came to a fist fight. Overall, though, you kind of got to go with the honor of Boromir, right? That doesn't really be...
Well, that, and what did you say about Spence offline?
What did I say about Spence offline?
He's a bit of a bitch.
Oh. Well, I mean, weak stomach, I figured covered that, but yes.
Characteristically, he was a really interesting guy. It was an interesting little plot hole in the whole movie. I think, he has a bit of an early exit, but it was an interesting.
Well, you know, putting this list together and looking at the lists, Spence came up in a lot of them because Sean Bean does a great job, right? Whether
phenomenal,
whether the person is, you know, the high and mighty honorable warrior, or if he's you know, weak stomach little bitch, there are ways to play both those roles well, and by all accounts, Sean knocked it out of the park with Spence.
But you're still going with Boromir?
I'm still going with Boromir. I mean,
because Spence is a bit of a bitch.
Spence is a bit of a bitch. And I cry at Boromir's death scene, so.
Doesn't everybody? Oh, and then when you read the Elvish translation for what they're singing when he dies.
Oh, yeah.
Gets me every time. All right. So I guess by no surprise, the Duke basketball of Sean Bean characters is moving forward to round two.
Number one seed makes it past eight.
All right.
Okay, fourth, first, fifth seed.
Oh, are we going to fourth, first, fifth? Oh, yeah, I see what you did there. You did like an actual tournament.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we've got this set up, right? So 1v8 and 4v5 are on one side. They're the West That's Division. Right. And then 3v6 and what would that leave? 7v2 is on the East. So finishing up the West side here, finding out who our semi-finalists are. We have the Alex Trevelyan and Wilford set matchup.
Alec is only six when his Soviet parents are killed. He's whisked away to MI6, where he eventually becomes Agent 006. How boring. Little do they know, he immediately begins plotting his revenge against the British government for his parents' demise. That brings him directly into conflict with 007, Pierce Brosnan version.
And Wilford from the Snowpiercer TV series, because there is also a movie. Hell and the world has frozen over. Life cannot exist on the planet except inside a 1001 long car train that Wilford has built. Fueled by the Eternal Engine, it would seem that he's motivated to help preserve life on Earth. But as we learn more, it seems that he may just enjoy the power.
Okay.
Okay.
Wilford,
yeah,
badassery to the highest level.
He does an excellent job of playing Wilford in the TV show. I mean, we already said spoiler alert, so I'm just gonna fucking get into it. This is an instance of, and I feel like it has to be mentioned right off the bat, the rare reverse Bean. Now, what I mean by that is that instead of living from the beginning of the movie and dying before the end, he actually is not present at the beginning of the movie and then comes, the beginning of the TV show, and then comes back to life and makes it to the end, I think. I don't know. I think it got canceled by Netflix. So the rare reverse Bean card warrants...
The reverse Bean people!
warrants discussion in the very least. But he has created this long vehicle and is, as it goes to set off, actually betrayed by his number one engineer, who kicks him off the train and she takes over.
Wait, she?
She, yes.
That ass re-leveled down. No, I'm just kidding.
She has to give up her daughter to do that, but she feels like it's important because he's obviously just corrupt and wanting to create his own little world of classist
Who gets
society.
The daughter? Does Wilford get the daughter?
Wilford saves the daughter and actually starts up a backup train. So he is also on the track at the same time, and this they don't meet until 10 years down the line. This train has been traveling around Earth, staying in the sunny spot or on the sunny side of Earth for 10 years before Sean Bean shows up with her daughter, her dogs, and tries to take back his train. And you know what? He gets onto it. He is malicious, motivated, and just a excellent, excellent bad guy.
Is it a love train or a peace train?
It's neither of those. They are war trains. These are like the way, because you can't step outside. One of the punishments in Snowpiercer for people who disobey is for them to put their hands outside the train where they will be frozen solid, at which point they're brought back in and smashed with a hammer.
Mm.
So you can't step outside. So how he gets from one train onto the other train is he essentially latches onto the back of the bigger train and drills through the hull and creates a little tunnel.
think I saw them do that at the Science Center once with a banana and some liquid nitrogen.
I thought you were talking about drilling through the hull. So
No. I'm still thinking about the hand. Yeah, so Wilford, badass. Alec, I got to say, bit of a bitch. I mean, he loses to, let's face it, the second worst Bond of all time. And by worst, I just mean like Pierce Brosnan was not badass.
Well, I mean, he wasn't helped by poor CGI, but I mean, Alec was enough of a man to get through at MI6, right? He became a secret agent, even if it was one worse than everyone's favorite.
I mean, what are you going to do there? You just got to drink a little bit of tea, salute the queen. If he was Spetsnaz, maybe.
I mean, best of both worlds. He had the Russian heritage from his parents, and then he had the English training from MI6. He was eventually killed by a satellite dish.
Yeah, I got to say, the death of Alec, the fact that it was in... Well, GoldenEye is up there. I mean, the video game far surpasses the movie, for sure. But so, given that it was the death, the nature of the death, the bond that he was working with...
Well,
just the overall attitude of the character and that era of it scared the crap out of me. And that era of just really bad James Bond movies. I'm leaning Wilford. I think Wilford's got this. I think we might have our first upset. Now it's 4v5, but Wilford, come on. Apocalyptic world has a giant, drills through another giant impregnable train.
I mean,
comes just back.
Based,
the reverse bean.
The reverse bean. The reverse bean, man. You can't sit on the reverse bean. I think so. And I mean, even looking at the Alex Trevelyan death scene too. Like, he had Bond. He had him where he wanted, and then he got distracted because the pilot that was coming to rescue him suddenly had a gun at his head, and he looked away from him, and then he got pushed off of the satellite. So, you know, it's just.
More like Bronze Eye, taking it off the ball there.
I have to agree. I think Wilford takes this one, and you know, call it an upset if you want, but 4v5 is, you know, kind of you're at the coin flip territory there.
Wilford for the win.
Yep.
We have upset number one, 5-4. What's the next? Is it Eddard? Are we at Eddard now?
Okay.
2v7?
We enter into the Eastern Conference here with our 2v7, Eddard Stark of Game of Thrones versus John Marlett, Frankenstein Chronicles.
Less physical in the Eastern Conference, I got to tell you.
It is slightly less physical, but actually the interesting part of our... that was our last one was in a bad versus bad characters. This is our first good versus good characters, which, you know, throws a little bit more into the mix. Good. I feel like the good guy usually has the edge over the bad guy. So when you have a couple of those ones that line up, it, it throws it for a bit of a loop.
It does. So number two seed, Eddard Stark, obviously Lord and Steward in the North, the great epic of Game of Thrones. Well,
Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. That's the epic. But for everybody who didn't read Game of Thrones on HBO.
Yeah. Anybody who didn't watch the show for whatever reason, you know, he's called in to be the right-hand man of his buddy. The character is defined by a code of ethics, a code of honor that lead him down whatever path may be there. No, wait, we said spoiler alerts. Leads him to his death. He dies.
Stubbornly ethical.
Stubborn
Swede.
In the seventh seed, John Marlett from the Frankenstein Chronicles TV show. This is another one where going through the top 10 lists, it popped up quite a bit.
He's a sneaky character. Sneaky, underrated character.
He.
I don't think a lot of people knew about him.
I didn't. I, again, my knowledge of John Marlett and the Frankenstein Chronicles comes from a list of YouTube clips. That I watched the other day.
it's definitely Sean Bean in his more aged years, a little bit slower, a little bit wiser, calmer.
The show came out 2015, but takes place in the early 1800s, where John Marlett, Sean Bean, is a London River police officer who undercovers a corpse made up of body parts from 8 missing children and sets out to determine who is responsible. Really cool concept for a TV show, let me tell you. Like when I first watched some of those clips and found out what it was about, I immediately started looking up where to go see it.
You're watching it now, aren't you?
if I can find it.
I think it's on Netflix. Free ad for Netflix. Yeah. So John Marlett, very cool, interesting guy.
I mean, you know what? In an odd way, I feel like we've got a matchup of two very similar characters.
I was just about to say, similar to Ed Stark in some ways.
You know, a little older, on in his years, kind of. He's driven by duty here. He's trying to find. Marlett's trying to find who's responsible for the mass killings. Eddard is, following his blind code of ethics.
Trying to find who's responsible for one killing.
That's a good point, actually.
Very similar in terms of their morality and their compass, and I think the portrayal by Sean Bean himself.
Yep.
Similar
timelines, even, right? This would have been post Game of Thrones because he was only in it for the first season.
Yeah, but 2011, and then Frankenstein Chronicles was 2015, so very, very close.
Yeah, and honestly, character design, John Marlett rocks the heck out of the bowler hat that he has.
He does. And just well written. I think there's a lot of junk out there. There's so much stuff available that good writing kind of gets unnoticed sometimes because, you know, it's impossible to watch everything under the sun. So sneaky good writing on that side, and Sean Bean brings it to life. So this is one that's more, I don't want to say complicated, but it's trickier than just meets the eye. Although, at the end of the day, I think, you know, you want to see Duke in Kansas or, you know, whoever.
Yeah, of course, but I mean,
in the final,
everybody loves a Cinderella story, and I think I'm leaning Marlett.
Are you?
I think I am. So, I mean, like, ooh. Eddard Stark is an obvious popular pick. He was in the most popular show at the TV, most popular TV show at the time. And it's hard to say that there was like that clearly brought a lot of recognition to his name. On the other side, Marlett, you know, there's a handful of people who've seen it probably. People rave about it, but it would never got the recognition. But really, when you look at it, like, it almost feels like Stark was the development for him to become Marlett, right? And his betrayal.
Oh, so you're saying Stark was Pet Shop Sounds and Marlett was the White Album?
Yeah.
I could walk before you can run.
I could be convinced either way. I feel like this one might even be closer than our 4-5.
I'm gonna convince you on this one. I'm gonna turn you on this one.
Sure.
Think of the cultural phenomenon that was Game of Thrones, and how it really a huge part of it. I mean, he was on the cover for season one. Granted, he was the biggest actor that was in it, but he was the cover for season one. And the shock around the world, for those that did read the book, when he dies in episode 8 or 9, you think this is the main character, you're running with it. I'm going just on people who watch the show, right? You don't know what's coming. He did such a good job. People fell in love with Ed Stark. John Marlett is great for hipsters, I agree. Yeah, like people who go deep dive into these shows, but like Eddard Stark, he was in the bone. He was in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I forgot that he was kind of like the main character through season one. He definitely did a good job of capturing the hearts and minds of fans through that first season. So fair play. That's
so we going with Eddard? We're going with good old Ned Stark.
We're gonna go with Ned Stark, but he won it in overtime, and all the announcers said like he should have swept the floor with Marlett.
Should have been better. Yeah. He was out partying. He for Super Bowl. He was not prepared for this game.
He underperformed for sure.
He did. Full disclosure, I definitely almost seated Ned Stark lower because he was a character from a book, and I was like, nah, I want more like original characters. Totally forgetting that Boromir is a character from a book.
Happens to the best of us.
It does.
Okay.
I've been looking forward to this one. I've been looking forward to this one.
Yeah, really interesting. Okay, well let's get into it because we have our second Eastern Conference quarterfinal. Our second Eastern Conference matchup, and our final quarterfinal of the round, I guess, with third seed versus
the elite eight.
The elite eight. We'll workshop that. There's something there. We have in third seed Richard Sharp from the Sharp TV series, and in sixth seed we have Ian Howe from the National Treasure.
my boy Ian Howe. I wanted him number one. I think you know which way I'm going on this already.
Wow. Okay. Well, for those who don't know, Richard Sharp is a sergeant in the Peninsular War of 1809 in Portugal when he single-handedly saves a life as a general. This earns him a promotion to lieutenant, and he's placed in charge of the elite chosen men of the 95th Rifles. We follow Sharp and his ragtag band of misfits as they vex the French at every turn and even manage to stop Napoleon himself in his tracks.
And Ian Howe, the one and only, initially a partner to Indiana Jones-esque historian Ben Gates, portrayed by Nicolas Cage, Sean Bean as Ian Howe plots to steal the most precious Declaration of Independence in order to find the hidden treasure of the United States and the founding fathers. Ian Howe.
If the plot sounds fantastical to you, you just have to remember that there's Nicolas Cage in the movie. So,
oh,
you know,
God,
fair
he's
play.
Beautiful. next tourney.
You are
Ian Howe.
Ian Howe, hey, leading Ian Howe.
Ian Howe is one of the greatest bad guys of all time. Not just like children's movies, like of all time.
No.
Now, this might be my millennial speaking.
Sure.
But do you remember that? I'm going to take you back to 2003. When did the movie come out? Who cares? I'm going to take you back. You're sitting at home. Coming soon to own on DVD or whatever, or theaters. And blah, 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 blah. I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. What's the next line that everybody remembers from that friggin' little trailer?
Not the bees.
It's Sean Bean running his fingers through his hair going, he's got the bloody map. That line crushed it.
Oh,
nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, Like we said at the beginning, Sean Bean's known for playing like morally ambiguous characters, and to be honest, the reason that I haven't put more seating behind Ian Howe here is because I honestly thought he was the antagonist from National Treasure 2, who's Ed Helms, I think. Right, and he dies from drowning right at the end, and his like who he actually also does a magnificent job at playing a bad guy, because in that one he's just trying to clear his family's name. And
was
he,
it
like,
Ed Helms?
I mean, yeah,
I no Ed Harris.
Ed Harris. Harris. Ed Harris. Sorry. Ed Harris.
Ed Harris. Ed Helms. Oh my God,
that's a big mix up there. We'll fix that in post.
One of them was in Apollo 13 and one of them was in The Hangover. I don't.
Ed Harris. Ed Harris. Point being, Ed Harris. I thought he was Ed Harris, who I liked as a I found was a more memorable antagonist.
You find it more memorable? Oh, see, the only thing I remember about National Treasure 2 is when he pretends to be drunk in the Buckingham Palace there.
Nah.
Ian Howe, come on. Ian Howe figures out some of the clues and the codes on his own. He doesn't have any help, and he's got a bunch of dumbass henchmen with him.
True, but he's
Nicolas Cage is doing it with the other historian, and interestingly enough, the other guy from The Hangover.
Oh, yeah.
Doug.
That's actually a good point.
Doug, yeah.
Maybe that's where they met on the set of...
They're doing it together.
They met on the
he
set of...
He figures it out on his own. Sean Bean figures it out on his own, and he crushes it. He's like... And also, at the time, it was a Disney movie. Well, it's still a Disney movie, but it was for kids. And he was like scary, but not like, you know, can't go to sleep scary. Whereas Sharp, I feel like we should talk about the number three seed, because he's coming in. I feel like this might have been an overseed. This might have been a, what have you done for me lately? You were good in the past. This is definitely.
So I feel like very similar to John Marlett, Richard Sharp's going to suffer from being kind of the hipster pick. I don't think there's very many people who've seen the Sharp TV series as it was.
Was it 1993?
It was early it 90s,
was,
yeah.
It was a little House on the Prairies for me. A little too House on the Prairies for
me. Yeah, which is fair. You know, he doesn't have the same acclaim that we're going to have from a Disney movie that millennials grew up watching and loving. But, I mean, the character of Richard Sharp, I feel like, is what we would have wanted to see from a Boromir movie if he made it all the way through, kind of thing, right?
It's true. He's a good character. Doesn't he fights Daniel Craig at one point, doesn't he?
There's any number of people. You know, it was a British TV series, right? So pretty much everybody had a cameo in there at some point.
Oh yeah. Pre Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Everybody that was on Harry Potter was on that.
But I mean, The story of Richard Sharp is this perennial underdog, and he just like ingratiates himself with his men and is just the heart and soul of the fighting the fighting spirit as you know, Europe is being totaled by Napoleon as he goes wherever he wants to. And not only is he fighting the French and the forces allied there, but he's also fighting the aristocracy and the nobles of the British behind him who don't like how he conducts business, because he's this kind of no-nonsense, I'm going to do it how it needs to be done and I'm going to get it done.
Everybody does love somebody who sticks it to the man.
It's just,
And speaking of Ian Howe.
Yeah. You know, I was ready to walk away with this with Sharp, but, you've made some excellent points on Howe and,
did I?
Yeah.
I gotcha. Oh, good. We don't have to go down to the wire with the coin flip.
I mean, I know I said that the last matchup was closer than our 4-5 seed, but I think we've managed to close the gap even more here. I really feel like Sharp came in as the overdog on this.
1,000%. It was favorable seeding for Ian Howe, but look at that. We got two Cinderella stories here. I mean, one's a 5 seed, one's a 6 seed, but
Yeah, we do. We do, which actually does bring us to our semifinals, which
all right. Who do we got?
In the West, we have Boromir from Lord of the Rings, Captain of the White Tower, versus Wilford from Snowpiercer.
Oh, that's a tough one. Good versus evil.
Leader of the 1001 car. Wow. 1001 car long train.
Dalmatians?
No, it's 101. That's slightly
Wilford
less.
Wilford DeVille?
We missed that off the list.
We did. So Boromir versus Wilfred, and who do we have on the East?
And in the East, we have our 2 seed, Eddard Stark, versus our 6 seed, Ian Howe from National Treasure.
All right. Where do you want to start? West?
Let's go West-East. That's how we started in the beginning. East. So we've got right. Boromir versus Wilfred. Ooh. Yeah, that's...
Again, I think the millennial in me is going to, you know...
Well,
he saves Merry and Pippin.
I mean,
I know Wilfred saved the daughter, but he saved Merry and Pippin.
You're naturally going to be pulled towards Boromir because I don't think you've seen the Wilfred TV show. But even in seeing clips and even as someone who's watched Wilfred, I just like Boromir was the role that Sean Bean kind of is known for, right? Like if somebody says Sean Bean, they go, oh, Boromir from Lord of the Rings, right? And just the way that.
He was born to play it.
yes he was. But I mean just the way that he's able to portray just the dichotomy of his like desire to save his people and willing to do anything even if it means the damnation of everyone, there's a reason he's known for it, right? He ceases to be Sean Bean and he becomes Boromir in that.
That is the best way to put it. He was Boromir.
He was Boromir. Right. I mean,
he was Boromir. That death scene, man, when he's talking to Aragorn.
Yeah, that's just
you were my you. Yeah, my captain,
we'll,
my king.
We'll pull it up after this and have a good cry sesh.
Yeah.
But I mean, on the flip side, Wilfred is no slouch. It's an excellent role. The character himself is nearly impossible to kill. He's just like there's several times in the show where you think he's down and out, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he just has this arrogant confidence about him that is tough to shake. Like you feel the role after you stop watching it. Like you remember that. It never really got the show itself never really got the recognition that I don't know if it deserved, but it never picked up that popularity. It never picked up the popularity that you'd imagine, but he did a very good job playing Wilfred.
But did he take 3 arrows to the chest? I think the other thing to look at, too, is the extended version of Lord of the Rings and those scenes that he has with Faramir.
That's a very good point. Yeah, but
sheds
before
he's... whole new light, and he crushes it. Yeah. Absolutely crushes it.
Just... incredible emotion and
full feels.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly, truly an inspired role.
I feel like I had, my pick is Boromir, but I feel like I had my run in the last round.
I do have to say it's Boromir. It's closer than people might expect, between Boromir and Wilfred
for
me.
Right there.
like I said, Wilfred sticks with you. He is an excellent bad guy, and for him to, he just, like, after you're done watching the show, like, you still, he is a character. And if the show was more popular, if more people had watched it, we'd be talking about it more, and he'd be higher up.
He's a great also-ran.
I guess unfortunately that is the lot of
he's playing for bronze.
He's playing for bronze. He's in the 3-4 matchup, which we might get to if we've got time.
All right. What is it? 2-6? Eddard Stark, Ian Howe?
Eddard Stark and Ian Howe in the East. That's our 2-6 seed.
This is the ultimate good versus evil.
This is the ultimate good versus evil. This is the one that you pick as the ultimate.
This is the hill that I die on.
I'm brought back to what you said last round about Eddard Stark and just him being like, he was the main character in season one. Sure, he was only around for the one season, but
he really actually, if I'm being honest, Robert Baratheon and the guy, what's his name? The actor that played
John
Robert
Addy.
Baratheon. John Addy. I think he kind of stole the show from Sean Bean a little bit in carrying that show. But I've always been a big John Addy fan. But he, his delivery as Robert Baratheon was phenomenal.
I see. Eddard Stark is the main character of season one of Game of Thrones, all the way until he comes up head to head against Ian Howe, your Cinderella pick favorite. Oh, I see. I get it.
Then
now
we start to waver. I mean, yes, Cersei was pretty good, but she gets a lot better after. Come on. But yeah, you're right. It was Sean Bean, Eddard Stark. He carried that show through and through because everybody else was relative. They were all unknown.
We could have.
Nobody really.
We could have had. Other than, we could have had Marlet in the semis had we had this discussion.
Could you imagine Marlet versus Howe?
It wouldn't have been much of a
contest. Oh, that's not
contest.
How that works. I can't do seedings. Yeah. So John Addy. Oh, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, Robert Baratheon was pretty bad. But you're right. Again, I think you got to go back to the cultural phenomenon and just, like, he's still asked about Stark this day versus, I don't think he's asked about Ian Howe too much to this day. Although that was an iconic character. I don't know. I'm torn. I'm torn, man.
So I think I lean towards Eddard Stark, probably just because of the...
You would.
Yeah, well...
You have a beard.
Just because of the prolific nature of the show, and because we committed already in the first round to saying that he was the main character of season one, and he carried it, and he brought the emotion. He's what people kind of came back for.
He did. No, he did.
Crazy twist.
He definitely did. I think, though, that if you really looked at it, the performance from Addy there the King Baratheon there slightly edges out Stark. But the problem with Baratheon is he's too... I mean, okay, pre-season five, there was no character in that series that was one-dimensional. But Baratheon was a little bit more one-dimensional than Stark was. I mean, Stark was pretty, like, you knew what you were getting, but there were still those undertones and everything else that made him up, whereas Baratheon was just sort of a drunk by the end, although he did have, like, some darkness in him. See what I mean? Like, there was nuance there before, you know. Anyway, that's how, neither here nor there. We're going to go down a rabbit hole. But
well, so
I think Stark is kind of the man.
I would almost argue that Eddard Stark was one-dimensional in the fact that it was always honor, right? There was that question mark with Jon Snow, and it's like, oh, did he cheat on his wife while he was down in the wars? Is this his illegitimate child? But in the end, no, it was not it. It was always honor, and he was always chasing that.
It was, but was it, though?
Ian,
because his friend did stab the Sword of the Morning in the back. And he never really, although he did sent the sword back to Buddy's family, which is pretty nice. I mean, you're supposed to do that.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, like, Ian Howe shows us that kind of, like, complex character. And
he does, but the downfall of Ian Howe, as in every Disney villain, is it's usually about money or the one thing, and for this one it was about money.
Yeah.
I think if they'd built it out a little bit more, like if it was more about like the fame or something else, if it wasn't just about the money, but it's about the money.
Well, you know what? For me, it comes down to the tiebreaker. Eddard Stark isn't alive at the end of the movie, which is the truest Sean Bean move to pull.
Yeah.
Whereas Ian Howe, in a rare move, is actually alive. So I think we go Eddard through there.
We got it. And Ian Howe gets arrested like a punk. So, you know, doesn't go down swinging.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our final matchup then.
Where we all thought we would be.
Yeah, which really we just wasted half an hour talking about what we could have just started with, which was
we wasted everybody's time.
Boromir from Game of Thrones, or is Eddard Stark is Boromir from Lord of the Rings, or is Eddard Stark from Game of Thrones more Sean Bean-esque? Or is which of these two characters is the most Sean Bean?
Most Sean Bean. This is all where we were supposed to bean.
Which is peak Bean?
Peak Bean?
Peak Bean.
Peak Bean. Well, so, I mean, he was younger when he did Boromir. I mean, that story of him running up the mountain in full mail.
Yeah, that's
full,
just because he's scared of helicopters.
Right, which is a bit of a bitch move. But where is it?
Well, but choosing to not take a helicopter so you can run up the mountain in full gear instead, is that really a bitch move?
Ask Kobe.
Dude, that worked out too soon.
Too soon. 4 years ago. Too soon. Which one is peak Bean?
Both die before the end. Both are good guys.
Both die in the first iteration of the...
Both die in the first series. Iteration. Exactly. Don't make it into the sequel.
They don't, except through flashbacks. Well, which I guess they...
TV show versus... So one could argue that as Eddard Stark, he had much more airtime and we saw more of the character and he became more developed because of that. With Boromir, a lot of his development comes from the books and from, you know, extended scenes.
I think here's what we got to do.
Yeah.
Because it's both characters from books, and I totally knew that when I was seating them.
Pros and cons list?
Well, no, I was just... yeah. No, I think it's...
Tune into our sequel podcast, Pros and Cons.
Oh my God, there's an idea. Who did he capture the essence of, not the most, but the best, in the best way?
Oh,
did he capture more of the essence
character.
Of Boromir, or did he capture more of the essence of Eddard Stark? And it's interesting because the length of time between when the character was written and when it was portrayed on screen is vastly different. So I think there would be some changes anyway, because my initial gut says that he actually captured more the essence of Eddard Stark, but that's just on the surface if I look at it. I think if you dive deeper into it, maybe Boromir.
Well, I mean, that's a tough question too. The books, like you're saying, books written so far apart, right. and arguably less book time as well for Boromir as there is for Eddard Stark. I mean, we're in first person behind Eddard for a large portion of the Game of Thrones book, that's the name of the TV show, but that's also the name of the book, the only book that he's in. Whereas, I mean, Boromir, we're in a, is it from Frodo's perspective? I think it's third person omniscient through there. But we're never in the mind, or we're never behind Boromir in the book. So it leaves a lot more creative freedom, which is maybe the real reason why I feel like he wasn't playing Boromir in that. He was Sean Bean, and Sean Bean is Boromir, right? Because
Bean is Boromir.
There was that kind of play in the character. There was room for interpretation because you weren't in the head.
I think you got the answer right there. I think you just... We buried the lead. Sean Bean is Boromir versus he portrayed Eddard Stark.
And I mean, for us, millennials growing up around the time that Lord of the Rings came out, Sean Bean's going to be Boromir. For younger generation, Gen Zs, Gen Alphas, who maybe saw Game of Thrones as their first exposure to Sean Bean, he's going to be Eddard Stark, right? But I think that would be just because of the popularity of the show and the fact that he was the face for season one, and not necessarily because of his portrayal of Eddard Stark. I don't know that it was as all-encompassing. And maybe that's because he's distracted by the other characters and the other stuff going on in the show. Maybe that's because it was not the same once-in-a-lifetime performance. Who's to say? But I at least for us, for this list, I think it's got to be Boromir.
I think it's going to be Boromir too. I think, like you said, and like I kind of mentioned before, you know, Robert Baratheon and Mark Addy there crushed it as well, which some of the scenes he stole from. Because at the end of the day, you're right, Stark is a bit of a, not a boring character, but he can be boring in some scenes because he's so one-directional with that honor and morality and everything like that. Boromir had, Stark had layers, but Boromir, I think, had more layers, and he was able to do more with less because it was just the one movie, unless you're right, it's less screen time, and he totally captured it.
That's
actually... Again, man, that final scene when he's fighting the Uruk-hai and just gets gutted. And then that scene with... Oh, but even other ones where when they're in Lothlorien and he's talking to Aragorn about the White City and being called home for just perfection.
Goosebumps.
Perfection.
Goosebumps. I mean, I think you put it best. I think it's more with less, right? That's maybe the subtitle to this first episode is more with less. And I think that's what he does with Boromir. You might be able to put Eddard Stark and Boromir on the same level, but I think just because he does that much with less time, it's got to be Boromir.
It has to be.
Foregone conclusion. I mean, there's a reason he got seated one, and I feel a little bad letting him pile drive his way all the way through, but I mean, it's got to be.
Crushed it.
It could only be. The favorite.
Right?
The favorite son.
The favorite son comes home.
Let's go eat.
Have you ever been called home?
Let's go eat some grape tomatoes.
The greatest
oh.
Sean Bean character of all time, according to Brackets and Unicorns Unite, Boromir, son and heir of Denethor.
Incredible. I'm so glad that we made it here. This is exactly where I wanted to end up. And you know what? I was not in control of it the whole time, so I'm glad it ended up being there, though.
Wasted everybody's time.
Now, we do know that there are many good Sean Bean characters that got left off this list. And if you have a couple that you think of that we missed that should have placed somewhere in here or at least given a run for the bronze medal, keep it to yourself. We don't want to hear about it. This is our podcast. Get lost.
This was our top eight. Mostly because we realized how limited we were in actual Sean Bean characters.
We thought the list was going to be a lot bigger.
Yeah. I'm surprised about the death numbers.
Yeah. Yeah,
Those urban legends.
Top of that list, number one most killed of all time, actually also from Lord of the Rings, Sir Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee.
70 on-screen deaths.
Good for him. Everybody's favorite story. He knows what it sounds like when somebody gets stabbed in the back.
And he was the inspiration for Ian Fleming's novels.
James Bond.
Yeah.
I think he was one of them.
He was also the only cast member from Lord of the Rings to meet. You know what, Mike?
He met Tolkien.
Let's save this.
Let's table that.
Let's save this for episode two. The best Christopher Lee character. Brackets.
Bye.